us right here on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City every Monday through Friday at 6:30 p.m. We want to say thanks to our technical producer, Reggie Johnson, for all his hard work getting the message out to the world. Until next time, this is Aaron Bornstein for Occupy Wall Street Radio, signing off. I'll see you in the streets. It's going someplace and there's no turning back. The highway patrol chopper coming up over the ridge. Man sleeps by a campfire under the bridge. The shelter line stretching around the corner. Welcome to the new world. For the ghost of Tom Jones.
Hi, this is Gil Scott Heron, unknown bluesologist. Speaking to you on Free Speech Radio, WBAI 99.5 on your radio dial. Stay here.
TalkBack is your gathering place for the free and fair exchange of information and ideas heard here Monday through Thursday from 3 until 5 in the afternoon. I'm Hugh Hamilton. Join me as we explore the issues and events making news across the nation and around the world with expert guests, insightful analysis, and, of course, your comments, questions, and observations. That's TalkBack right here on WBAI New York.
Hi, this is Jerry Stiller. You are listening to WBAI New York 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Where are my keys? Anybody see my keys? Who took my keys?
And you are listening to radio station WBAI New York. The time is 7 o'clock. Time once again for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse.
Very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Mike.
Good evening.
Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
Bernie S. Somewhere.
Greetings from Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania. Okay, great. We are here tonight on the eve of Republican National Convention coverage, which starts at 8 o'clock here on WBAI. And, you know, I really suggest listening because conventions are boring. They really are, but they're exciting on Pacifica. If you listen to the commentary and the insight, you'll learn a lot about the political process here in this country. So, by all means, stick around 8 o'clock until whenever they go to sleep. We'll be covering the Republican convention and next week the Democratic convention. So it's just so much fun.
It's unconventional coverage of the conventions.
That's the official slogan, isn't it?
Well,
if you're thinking of going to the RNC convention and you wish to go inside the building, well, first of all, good luck. But assuming you even have a ticket to get in, there are certain things you can't bring in. Among them, weapons, firearms, knives, regardless of size. Now, the interesting thing, though, is that in the so-called free speech zone, or the place where you're allowed to demonstrate as long as you don't say anything of worth, you can't bring in all kinds of things to that area. You can't bring in balloons or signs that have sticks on them and things like that. But because Florida has all of these gun rules, as far as giving rights to the guns, you can bring a gun in there. So you can bring a balloon in, but you can bring a gun in. That's Florida for you.
So if someone brings a balloon, can you shoot the balloon down?
Well, I don't know. That might happen. They might do that for you. But the point is, certain rights are respected a lot more than other rights. And the First Amendment seems to be the first one shot down, quite literally.
It is true that balloons are not mentioned in the U.S. Constitution.
No, they're not.
No, they're not. There's no Balloon Protection Act. Now, that's just one item that's not allowed inside the building. Yeah, weapons aren't allowed inside the building. I'm surprised they weren't able to get that struck down. But you also can't bring in plastic replicas of weapons. So they don't want to be fooled. They want you to bring in a toy gun and have them think it's a real one. They also will not allow explosives or fireworks inside the building. Baseballs? Baseballs just listed there for some reason.
Is explosive debate allowed?
I didn't say anything about footballs, just baseballs. And apparently you can get a softball in there because it's not a baseball, right? Umbrellas, unless they're provided by the Committee on Arrangements or the 2021 Tampa Bay Host Committee. This must be a typo. It's 2012, not 2021.
Okay. I think I know why.
Why?
About the umbrellas.
Well, it's bad luck to open one, right?
Well, not only that, and they have enough, Republicans have enough bad luck going for them already, but umbrellas can be sort of like a covert pop-up signs. Like you could have a big sign on the top of the umbrella that wouldn't be obvious when you're carrying it in, but when you unfurl it, it could say something that, it could send some message that the RNC wouldn't want to be sent.
Well, you know, I think just by any of us showing up, that would be sending a message that they wouldn't want to have sent. But regardless, there's more on this list. This is one I really don't get. Strollers? Why in God's name are they forbidding strollers from being brought in to the convention hall? I mean, basically, maybe they're afraid that their intelligence will be dwarfed by toddlers who speak the truth.
I thought it was them being thoughtful. They don't want any children exposed to their hateful agenda.
You think that might be it?
No, but no,
I don't think that's it. You can't bring poles or sticks, and it's not Polish people, poles, you know, the metal kind. Coolers, can't bring coolers, so you got to drink it hot, whatever it is. Laser lights, laser pointers. Gee whiz, someone told them about that too. You can't bring whole fruit. It's weird, it says whole fruit. Now, I guess sliced fruit is okay, but whole fruit they got something against.
Well, it's not processed enough for their agenda.
Yeah, it must be. Containers of any type, bottles, cans, spray canisters. I imagine the things that protesters in Europe throw at the police that basically give off all that noxious...
What about pockets?
What about pockets?
It's a container, a type of container.
Well, you have an interesting discussion then with the people at the door if you've tried to get in. Aerosols. So you can't bring any aerosol cans of any sort.
Aren't purses and wallets containers?
Well, yeah, okay. I'm sure, a lot of things can be defined as containers if we really want to have extended conversations with the guards. But I'm just reading what it says here. Mace. You can't bring mace into the Republican National Convention. Now, you know, there's a lot of mace around, but apparently you can't bring your own. Pepper spray, tasers, stun guns, similar devices. You can't bring that in. Sharp and or pointed objects such as wit, razor blades. what else? Scissors, knitting needles, screwdrivers, etc. You cannot bring a Leatherman. Whistles? Wait, this is crazy. You can't bring whistles, noisemakers, horns, or drums. unless authorized by convention officials. So the only sounds you'll hear later on are authorized sounds, not the kinds of sounds that were brought in independently. Banners, signs, you can't bring those in. No, that's freedom of speech, and they don't want that. Flashlights, unless authorized. Why would they authorize flashlights? I don't quite understand that. Unopened envelopes or packages. So if you're thinking you're bringing your electric bill down there, you better open it first. Don't carry it around
can
with you.
Can you open it at the inspection station?
I imagine they'll make you open it at the inspection station because, yeah, they don't want any surprises of any sort, including a high electric
bill. What if you have an unsealed envelope, you put something in it, and then you seal it once you're past the guards?
They say you can't bring this in. I imagine you can construct your own envelope once you're already in there.
It's a loophole.
I mean, once you're in there, you can create envelopes, I suppose. You can also probably manufacture a mace if you really wanted to. Technically, you could get away with that if you could figure out a way to do that inside the convention hall. Camcorders, large cameras with lenses over 4 inches. This does not apply to the media, but then the media probably has no interest in that anyway. Voice enhancement devices, such as bullhorns. And again, that doesn't apply to media. I don't know why the media would be using bullhorns inside the convention hall, but apparently they can.
So you can't have pointed objects. You can't have sticks. I guess pointed sticks are right out.
Pointed sticks are right out. Yeah, you can't have that.
So I imagine the bullhorns are for the Fox News folks who are cheerleading.
I don't know. Tune in later and find out. Tripods for cameras. Again, that doesn't apply to the media. And finally, backpacks or carry cases for binoculars or cameras. And again, that does not apply to the media. We actually got this from Ron Paul's site. I don't know why Ron Paul is spreading around all the things you can't bring to the convention. I know that there's pretty much a battle going on between his camp and the RNC. So it's kind of interesting, isn't it?
Emmanuel.
Yes, go ahead.
There's one thing that's not banned this year that was, it's a trivia question for our listeners. There's one item that was banned, it was banned for delegates and party apparatchiks from using at one Republican convention in our lifetimes that there's no such ban in more recent years.
You want to just tell us?
Well, okay. It was cell phones.
Okay, so cell phones are no longer banned, but they were banned at one point.
They were. I think it was either 1988 or 1992 that the RNC passed down a strong order that delegates and, you know, people involved with the RNC could not use cell phones because they feared they were so easily the cell phone conversation signals were so easily intercepted and listened to that they didn't want. They were concerned about communication security because many of our listeners remember back before the mid 90s, cell phones were analog and you could pick them up with like any kind of UHF radio receiver, a scanner, even an old TV set. And they did not want to risk the embarrassment or loss of communication security by their important people using cell phones there. It's not as much of an issue now that their cell phones are digital. They're much harder to intercept. Well, I'm sure there's people around Tampa who are doing that right now.
Well, could you possibly bring in an old-fashioned cell phone and maybe have people pounce on you because it's still considered dangerous?
No, in fact, it wouldn't work anyway because the FCC allowed the carriers to shut down the analog portions of their network.
Well, no, I wasn't asking if it still works. I know it doesn't work, but they might still panic when they see it.
You know, that's a good question. I don't know if and the people there would even know what it was. They would just say, oh, it looks like a cell phone. It's okay.
They don't know what a lot of things are, but they still ban them.
Right.
So, all right, Rob.
I'm a bit curious if getting off a train near the convention is still banned, because that could get people in a lot of trouble at one point.
Getting off a train?
Yeah, getting out of the subway near the convention.
Oh, you mean when it was here in New York, you couldn't do that.
So they solved this problem in Tampa by just getting rid of the subways entirely.
They don't have subways in Tampa, do they?
I don't think so.
I didn't think they did.
If they do, then what I just said is wrong.
Yeah. Okay. I understand we have Kyle joining us now from Seattle. Is that right?
Yes.
Hey, welcome.
Hi, I'm here. Can you hear me?
We hear you fine. We're taking a poll in the station. Everybody seems to be hearing you.
Good.
Good, good.
Wow. I made it.
Yeah, you were racing around town doing.
Oh, Lord. Look, I was driving because I had to deliver something. I usually drive if it doesn't fit on my bike. So I was zigzagging across Seattle, and it felt like every turn I made, there was a car or construction or people lined up. I went on Denny, on Mercer, on every street, possible.
Those are Seattle streets, by the way.
Avoid one thing, and then at the next turn, there'd be another thing to avoid. It was insane.
It sounds like New York, almost.
Yeah. I did not come back the way I planned I'd come back, you know, and had to readjust my schedule like 5 or 6
Yeah, times. And I'm sorry, because I, you know, this is the danger of cell phones. I called you before the show to prepare for the show.
I should never have picked up the phone.
Yeah, you should never have picked up the phone. I mean, you texted me, and I was on the BQE, and I knew better not to even read it until I got to the Williamsburg Bridge.
Yeah.
Well,
the person that I threw it at, they seemed to have... They got up after they fell over, and I didn't see too much blood.
But I called you at exactly the worst moment, I guess, and it's always a risk you take when you call people. I thought you were on your tall bike, actually, and that would really be catastrophic. I think you were delivering Club Mate to various places,
and
you tend to do that on your tall bike, from what I hear. It's quite a sight to behold. Kyle, the reason we're bringing you in here tonight is to tell a story. It's an interesting story, because this is something that, go ahead.
It's happening.
I'm sorry?
It's a happening story. It's something that's, been sort of bubbling in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
We took a trip to Serbia a couple of years ago, and, all the former Yugoslavian republics, and, we were, really fascinated at some of the history and some of the personalities and the connections. And I remember that we brought back some Tesla bills, and
yeah.
It seemed like ever since people have become more and more interested in Tesla.
Well, it's weird. I mean, people in the hacker world have always had sort of an affinity with Nikola Tesla. I don't think we knew when we went over to Serbia quite the historical tie that he had. There's a museum, there's statues, all kinds of things. But yes, on the the 100 dinar bill, there's a picture of Nikola Tesla.
Yeah, there's a sort of a montage of different things he designed, some sort of ink block, him and that kind of thing.
And we actually got a hold of a large amount of Tesla bills, and we started distributing them at our hacker conferences and at our online store, and they became very, very popular. Of course, we ran out of them pretty quickly. Something that happened, was this last month that we did this?
Well, yeah, so there's been a lot of interest in different projects and things, and we were sort of poking around, and we looked into the history a bit, and in fact, on Long Island, in Shoreham, on Long Island, there is a facility that was Tesla's last known working laboratory, and I wanted to go check it out, and I think you and I just sort of took a trip. I don't know what we were doing that weekend, or we were just sort of poking around.
Well, that was either the time we went strawberry picking or the time we went to Shelter Island. I forget which one it was.
You're right. I think maybe it was... I don't know.
I think it was July, though. It was July, and I said, Kyle, you know, you really should see this place because it's right on the island. We're right here someplace. I know it exists. And it took us a little while to find it, but, you know, the street is called Tesla Street, so it wasn't that hard.
Right.
And we parked the car and just kind of walked around this property. How would you describe the property?
Yeah. So, suffice to say, it's in Shoreham, and it's a big fenced area that is partially overgrown. In fact, a good deal of it is overgrown. You can see it from sort of a main route or a roadway going through, sort of heading north on that fork of the island that you start to get into, I think. And basically, it's fenced in. You can see a mix of architecture. Some of the stuff is new, so it looks like a bit of an office park type thing on one corner. And then there's sort of this old building that's a little bit, it's further back. It's like, I want to say like a couple thousand feet back towards the middle of the property. And that's just on one side. And you can kind of, Tesla Street is by a fire department. There's sort of some neighborhoods, and you can't really go much further back on that side, but there's a loading dock and some other sort of distribution center type stuff. And what it is you're getting a mix of the original building, which I said was a couple thousand feet back, and the previous tenant, which actually was Agfa, I believe.
Agfa.
Which is a photochemical company.
Okay.
And they were there. They eventually moved out, but...
I believe their contribution was to make that into a Superfund site.
Because they were dealing with, you know, photography and a lot of chemistry. But anyway, we were walking around the area, and we got to go and look at the main driveway where Agfa had their entrance. And you can sort of get a different vantage of the old Wardenclyffe laboratory. But it's the only remaining original building there is that lab. The rest is sort of a parking lot. And as you sort of go around the property, you see some of the old AGFA buildings, like for perhaps an office on the one corner. And then I think on the other corner is like more of a manufacturing side. And on the back of it has a loading dock, obviously.
So the whole place was pretty much not in use, overgrown. In fact, it was for sale. And we started talking, saying, wow, wouldn't this be great if this could be saved, turned into a Tesla museum, and basically rally the computer hacker community, the scientists, all these people that really believe that Tesla is an important figure in the history of technology. And right. We just started brainstorming about that, right?
Well, we spent the whole car ride back sort of going back and forth trying to figure out, like, well, how would they do that? Like, gosh, you know, there's got to be some tie-in to preserve the history, to let people check it out. But also, like, what if somebody used it for something really bizarre or something sort of hackery? You know, because we're seeing a lot of really creative use of space and stuff like that in the community in the past couple of years, especially with hacker spaces. So we just debated. We talked back and forth. And we took a bunch of photos. I actually still have them for processing. I have to go process some of the ones I took of the architecture. And then we also got a little information from the realtor, like we photographed some of the old signs and stuff, because we really wanted to know, like, hey, maybe we could organize this information and pass it along, and maybe somehow this place could be saved, because the story was just, it was just this odd moment where, you know, there's all this interest, and here it is in New York, in sort of our proximity, and, you know, why not go check it out and see if we could spread the word and get people to get involved in it. But oddly,
yes,
before we could even really do anything, I mean, I still have the film to be developed. Like, we haven't really done much on it yet. All these other people started getting together, and what's happened is they've raised more than enough money to take over the facility.
Well, let's explore this a little bit. Obviously, we couldn't really continue with this. We had a conference to put on and all kinds of distractions, but it was always in the back of our minds. A couple of weeks ago, I started finding out about something called, and this is what it is called, Operation Let's Build a Goddamn Tesla Museum. That is really what it's called. And basically the intro is goes something like this. Nikola Tesla was the father of the electric age. Despite having drop-kicked humanity into a second industrial revolution, up until recently, he's been an unsung hero in history books. If you don't know who Tesla is, well, research it on the internet, and you'll find out all kinds of interesting things. His final laboratory is located in the sleepy town of Shoreham, New York, you know, the former site of the nuclear power plant that didn't get built or finished. It's known as Wardenclyffe, and it's where Tesla attempted to build a tower that would provide free wireless energy to the entire Earth. Not Wi-Fi, wireless energy to the entire Earth. It was quite a goal there. Unfortunately, Tesla lost his funding before the project was completed, and in 1917, the Wardenclyffe Tower was demolished. Subsequently, the land was sold to a film and paper manufacturer. However, the land, laboratory, and foundation beneath the tower are still there, and very recently went up for sale. And right now, a nonprofit is trying to buy the property and turn it into a Nikola Tesla museum. I was blown away when I saw this. Wow, someone actually is thinking of doing exactly what we were discussing not 2 months ago. But, you know, it just seems so impossible. The property was listed at $1.6 million. You know, not exactly spare change you have hanging around. But this nonprofit popped up. They received a matching grant from New York State of up to $850,000. And what that meant was if they could raise $850,000, all of a sudden they would have $1.7 million because it would be doubled. Okay, so great. All right, you don't have to raise that much money. You only have to raise $850,000. Still quite a daunting task. But then something amazing happened. Word got out on the internet. And not only did they meet the goal, they far exceeded the goal, and it's still coming in, and there is all this enthusiasm now, and it's just simply incredible. It's a testament to what you can do on the internet if you get the word out, if the right people step up and do something. And now it's quite possible that dream we had, just seeing this abandoned property, could turn into reality. We have on the phone with us the head of what is known as the Tesla Science Center at Wardenclyffe. Jane Alcorn joins us from Shoreham, New York. Jane, are you there?
I am. Hello.
Well, greetings. Did you hear Kyle's story about how we first saw the place? Does that match kind of what how you became introduced to it?
Actually, we didn't just pop up. We've been around for about 17 years trying to save that property.
Oh, wow. Well, we just heard about you 2 weeks ago.
I know. Everybody's heard about us.
So
it's been quite a journey. Yeah. We started out as a small science museum in our local high school, and the high school needed the classroom spaces we were using, and we were growing as a science museum, and I knew about Tesla just a little bit. I knew he had worked in that little laboratory down the street from where I once lived, and I thought, well, that's a great place for a science museum. Let's move our museum there. But it was a site that was undergoing the cleanup, as you mentioned earlier. And so we moved the museum that we had begun into another space in another town. And I stepped off that board, and I've been since then trying to find a way to save that property.
So 17 years you've been working at this. What changed recently to make it suddenly explode into this, what seems to be a tremendous success?
Well, it seems to me that it's all about timing. We found a person who could promote our need to save this property and the importance of it, and that was Matthew Inman, also known as the Oatmeal. And Matthew had gone through a couple of events in his life recently that made the timing right for him. He had been involved in a crowdfunding event based on a problem he had with his own web page, and that brought him a lot of attention, and he has hundreds of thousands of followers. So he was able to raise $220 in 2 weeks, $220,000, excuse me, in about 2 weeks for a cause that he was promoting. And following that, he had a wonderful comic on his He's an internet comic, and he had a wonderful comic called Why Tesla Was the Greatest Geek Who Ever Lived. So not only did he have that experience with the crowdfunding, but he also was recognized as a big Tesla fan with many, many followers. We put out a plea because what was happening here is that we had received a grant in 2009 from New York State. And it's not really a matching grant. It's a reimbursement grant. So we had to raise $850,000, spend it on the property, on purchasing this land, and then we'd be reimbursed. And we have 1 year left to access that money. So it was really getting critical that we raise $850,000, which is why that was our goal. And there was additional interest in that property because it had just been the cleanup had just been approved. So now it was a free and clear piece of property that could be sold by Agfa Corporation, and people were starting to inquire about it. And we got a little frightened that it could be bought out from under us and we'd never have the opportunity to turn it into the showplace and memorial to Tesla that it ought to be.
So now, after all of this publicity on the internet, you not only raised the $850,000, but you exceeded it. Do you know what it's up to now?
Last time I looked, it was $1,166,000.
That's really incredible. What's the next step then? Do you make an offer on the land, or I know you still have another month of raising funds to go. Is there more money that should be raised?
Absolutely. This will only purchase the land. And once you purchase the land, you can't let it just sit there. It's important that we begin the process of renovating, restoring, and protecting the property and the laboratory. So it's absolutely critical that we continue to raise the money so we can begin that process. We need to make sure it's secure from vandalism and further deterioration. And we need to be able to begin getting the experts in who can tell us the best ways to protect the laboratory and to renovate the other buildings to make it a science center. One of the things that has also happened along with that is we've had some wonderful supporters for a lot of this history. And of recent years, in the last 2 years, I guess, we've had a filmmaker who's intent on making a film about Tesla, and he's been looking for funding for his film, but as part of his budget, he's been pitching the idea that $1 million of his operating budget would go towards saving Wardenclyffe. And he's here with me. I thought you might like to meet him as well. His name is Joe Sikorsky, and the film is called Fragments from Olympus. And, you know, he's going to try to help us raise additional money through his funding that will help us to save those buildings and turn them into a real Tesla legacy.
All right, welcome to Off the Hook, Joe.
Thank you for having us, and thanks for, you know, really exposing this important piece of history to all your listeners.
Absolutely. I still can't believe it's actually happening. It was so recently that we were just walking around thinking that this would never happen. It's one of these dreams. And we find you guys been hard at work making this happen. And it seems like so many people agree that there should be some kind of a museum to Nikola Tesla. And there isn't any in the United States at all. I understand there's one in Belgrade. Kyle, were we aware of that when we were in Belgrade? There was a Tesla museum there?
Oh, you know, I somebody told us. I don't know if we remembered it at the time. We certainly didn't go and see it.
Yeah, so. Well, we should. But this would be the only one of its kind in this country. So absolutely. But maybe you guys could tell us for the benefit of the listeners who might still not really know who Nikola Tesla was. Why is he so important?
I think that just the fact that people are listening to radio. Is evidence of one of his main contributions to the world. He is considered the father of radio by the United States Supreme Court. When Marconi, who we all look at as, or many of us have until now, looked at as the father of radio, when he sent his signal across the Atlantic, he was using 17 of Tesla's patents. And so Marconi did have an accomplishment. He did send that signal across the Atlantic. However, Tesla had already done radio signals. In 1898, he had demonstrated robotics, remote control, and radio, along with the logic gate used in computer languages, in one little invention called the teleautomaton. And he had demonstrated it at Madison Square Garden. It was a boat-like vehicle, and he was able to use the very first demonstration of robotics and remote control in demonstrating that vehicle, and it was really a transmitter and receiver, which is radio. So there was a court case. Tesla was trying to assert his precedence in radio, and the Supreme Court agreed with him. Unfortunately, their decision came several months after he had died, but he still is the father of radio.
Now, I know a lot of people say that Thomas Edison deserves the credit. I know there was quite a bit of contention between the two of them. Can you outline that a little bit?
Sure. Tesla and Edison actually had a working relationship when Tesla first came to America, and he worked in Edison's lab for a while, maybe about a year. But Edison was a promoter of DC electricity, and Tesla had devoted his attention to alternating current, and he'd been able to come up with a very efficient way of transmitting it. And so Tesla and Edison were involved in what is called the War of the Currents. George Westinghouse bought Tesla's patents, and he and Tesla eventually were able to persevere and come out on top in this War of the Currents. And alternating current is what we use today throughout the world to transmit electricity. And part of that is due to Westinghouse and Tesla harnessing Niagara Falls with alternating current. And also they lit up the 1893 Chicago Exposition, which was the World's Fair of its time. And they again used the alternating current. And it was quite a feat to be able to do that. He ushered in the electric age, really.
Wow. Hey, Jane?
Yes.
This is Bernie S. in Philadelphia. I just wanted to ask you and Joe, first I want to ask Joe about his film, but I also wanted to ask you, do you think there's a potential for, if you get enough funding, for building a replica of the Wardenclyffe Tower, which was supposed to beam electrical energy around the world for people to use wirelessly. And I just wanted to remark also that I think one of the reasons that Tesla lost funding for that amazing project, which he successfully demonstrated from one mountaintop to another somewhere, the reason he lost funding for it is because his financial backers realized there'd be no way to meter the electricity usage with a power meter, so you could be billed. So they're like, well, screw that. We can't make a lot of money on this. So what about this film, and do you think the tower could be rebuilt?
Well, it couldn't be rebuilt the way Tesla built it. It was 187 feet high when he had it constructed, and that's about 18 stories. And the building and zoning codes of Brookhaven Town, where Shoreham is located, would not permit that. However, we would love to be able to build a replica tower, a scale model of it as large as we possibly could, if the funding were available and the zoning permits. We'd like to be able to do that. I think that would be a wonderful attraction. Everyone would want to see Tesla's tower, even if it weren't in full scale. I think it would still be a wonderful thing to have.
Well, that's about the height of the Hotel Pennsylvania, 18 stories.
Oh, wow. Well, that's something to consider in the middle of Shoreham. You know, it's something many of us have been to hacker gatherings and camps, and the Tesla coil that people set up at some of these things, that's always a big attraction. People always line up to see that. I don't know if any of you guys that were at the European conferences remember this.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, there's Tesla coils are very popular among hackers.
Absolutely.
We've seen them at the Maker Faire as well, where they're used to make music.
Yeah, wasn't I put in the Faraday cage on one of those? I have dim recollections of this.
I think you were, yes.
Yeah. it was something else.
At a tour camp recently, Rob Flickener from HBL demonstrated a portable Tesla gun that he built, and he gave a brief talk about that.
Uh-huh. Well, now, what does a Tesla gun do for the benefit of listeners who might be afraid of such a thing?
It puts out a lot of joules of electricity in the form of a sort of a violet bolt. And you can see it if you hold a grounded object, and he was demonstrating it. And I actually held something that was grounded, and I was able to see this arc. And, yeah, completely portable, running on a cordless drill battery.
Now, Joe, I know we were talking about the film project. Is there more than one film project going on involving Tesla?
Well, in Hollywood, there have been six or seven for the last 40 years, and in various stages of development, but mostly sitting on a shelf, mostly because the genre usually traditionally has not been very profitable. A biopic that's a period piece with a lot of special effects in Hollywood dollars translates to a lot of money and usually not a big viewership. So Hollywood not wanting to take a lot of risks with their money, or, you know, when they use that type of budget, or banking more on, you know, comic book heroes, things that they know they're guaranteed a return for. Our approach is much different. We're going to get an epic look for an independent budget. So we're going to keep our film budget low and still try to keep the production quality high.
So what is your ETA as far as completing that project?
Well, actually, what started this whole great campaign by the Oatmeal was after we had actually included the saving of Wardenclyffe in our film budget. So before we even would shoot a frame of film, we would have donated $1 million to Jane's organization to purchase the property. We actually had a letter of commitment for all the funds, so we were ready to go. And unfortunately, our investor had a sudden illness, and our deal got put on hold. At the same time, there were some people interested in buying the property. So we started putting out some more appeals to find some other investors to come in. Jane put out appeals on Facebook, and fortunately, Matthew Inman of the Oatmeal responded and started this amazing campaign. And, that part is history. So as far as us, though, it obviously we were hoping to begin shooting in late fall, and we had to abandon those plans. And we're trying to pull together funding to begin shooting early 2013.
Jane, I had a question for you about the property itself.
Yes.
Have you ever had the opportunity to to explore inside the facility and check it out from the other side of the fence. I think
actually,
a lot of people
yes.
are really eager knowing
I've been on the property a couple of times, and
okay.
one of those times Joe came with me with his cameras. So we do have some footage of the interior.
Wow. So is the lab itself, is it somewhat intact? Are there, like, relics and interesting things in there?
What's
the layout?
Unfortunately, it has been used for the last maybe four decades as office space for the AGFA production, for their film production enterprise there.
I see.
So it was once two very large rooms, one that Tesla used as a display space for his equipment and his inventions, and the other was a workspace with a glass-blowing lab and lathes normal kind of workshop
sure.
space.
Right.
And all of that has been divided up into little office spaces. So the building is intact.
Yeah.
The brick original structure is there. It's got original windows that have been boarded up to protect them at our request. So cleaning it out and gutting the additions on the inside isn't really a big issue. We think we can get it restored to the way Tesla had it pretty close anyway, once we have the money raised that will allow us to do that. So, yes, we've been inside, but one of the sad things is that there's been a lot of vandalism over the years, and
uh-huh.
you can see that in Joe's film. He put together a public service announcement, which you can see on our webpage,
okay.
and so anyone who's interested in seeing what it looks like inside can get some view of it by going there.
It's interesting.
Heartbreaking to look at.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned the vandalism, because when Kyle and I were out there, we went to one of the entrances that had a guardhouse, and apparently the guardhouse had been vandalized, and the papers from inside had thrown all over the place, and we saw some of these papers on the ground, and we picked it up. It was kind of creepy, because the guard who was guarding that property all night long would have to write in pen for every hour, 3 o'clock and all is quiet. And there's a whole notebook of that phrase over and over again. It's like straight out of The Shining.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of thing that was going on. But yeah, that got vandalized. But, the question of the inside of the building, being restored, are there pictures of, how it was when Tesla was operating it? And do you think it could be restored to something along those lines?
Fortunately, yes. Fortunately, there are pictures of the interior, and you can see what it looked like with his inventions on display, and there's also a photograph that shows what the workshop area looked like with the sunlight streaming in, and that will certainly be a part of our guide to making this look as it should. We won't be able to make it exactly because, of course, that's not possible, but we're going to try to be true to Tesla and true to the building. There are some interesting things in there still. There's a big tank, and we haven't been able to explore it carefully enough to find out what that was for. We don't know if it was part of the generating system that that Tesla had when he was working there. Because it's been all cut up into lots of little rooms, it's kind of hard to see what's there. We have had people from the New York State Department of Parks, Recreation and Historic Preservation come with us and view the property, and they agree with us that it should be on the National Register of Historic Places and the New York State Register of Historic Places, and we hope to do that once we acquire the property.
Now, Jane, I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about why. I mean, it's very sad that Tesla died basically penniless and forgotten in the early 20th century, but and I remember even as recently as when I went to school, I wasn't taught about Tesla. It was all Edison and Marconi and so on. What do you think is the source of basically this resurgence that Tesla is having among geeks like us?
Well, I think that people recognize Tesla now are starting to, because we all sit at our computers or we're busy with our work and we work hard. We don't always get acknowledged. And I think people can identify with the dilemma that Tesla felt when he was working hard and he wasn't acknowledged. So there's that one little, identification kind of aspect to it. But I also think that we're starting to realize the impact that Tesla has had on our lives. And until now, it wasn't really apparent the kinds of things that he did was so important. You know, we used a lot of our the inventions that were commercialized by other people but had their origins in Tesla's research and invention. And nowadays, with the advent of the communications that we have, all the wireless communications and the computer communications, we're able to share the information that we know so much more rapidly, and knowledge of Tesla is starting to leak out, and people are starting to recognize what he did. Just the logic gate from his 1898 teleautomaton that's now part of computer languages, and his vision of wireless communication, he thought that we would be able, and I'm talking about over 100 years ago, he was talking about sending pictures, words, and sound wirelessly. And those were his dreams, and no one had thought of those kinds of things before. So we're starting to live his dream, and we're recognizing his hand in it.
Does Tesla have any surviving relatives, and have they weighed in on this?
Well, there is, to my knowledge, and one surviving relative, and his name is William Turbo. He is the grandson of Tesla's sister, and he's a very, very lovely man. He lives in New Jersey, and we've had many a conversation. He's very, very happy about the way things are going. He's quite excited. He visited with us last fall when we had a conference. Joe had presented the teaser for his film, and Mr. Turbo was extraordinarily excited about it. He felt it was one of the best things he'd seen that reflected his illustrious ancestor's life. And so he's a wonderful man, and he's very excited about what's happening here. But he's the only person I'm aware of still alive who actually met Tesla.
Wow.
That's interesting. Wow. boy, now it seems to me, too, that what you guys are doing, the plans to have a museum, should be eligible for all kinds of grants and funding from various agencies. Have you looked into that at all?
Well, we are starting to look into that, and we've had some wonderful offers from a couple of private foundations, but they're big donations to us, but they're not big enough to make the dream happen yet. So we're certainly hopeful there'll be other opportunities to access grant money. We'll be looking into as many of those as we can to see if we're eligible for them. And we certainly hope that anyone who might be listening who knows of anything like that would be willing to share that information with us.
So I don't know the specifics, but a lot of times it's a lot easier for you to get these grants if you're able to demonstrate that the public is behind you too, and the public has shown that. But how can our listeners contribute if they want to?
Well, there are three ways that you can contribute. The first is through the Indiegogo/Tesla Museum page, and that's the campaign that we're all excited about that's raised so much money. The second way is directly through our webpage, which is www.teslasciencecenter.org. We have a donate button, and you can go through PayPal that way. Or you can send a check right directly to our post office box, which is Box 552, Shoreham, New York, 11786.
Now, I understand that there have been several rather momentous donations that have been made, and some of them are rather interesting numerical amounts. Did you care to go into that at all?
Oh, sure. So on Indiegogo, there are perks that people get for donating to our cause, and several of them have the number 3 as the donating amount. So there's a $3 donation. You don't get a perk for that except the good feeling that you've contributed to something worthwhile. But for $33, you get a different perk, or for $333, or for $3,333. And all of this is because Tesla was very fond and looked at the number 3 as being a very important numerical digit in mathematics and science. And then, of course, there was the biggest donation number, which was $33,333. And I have a little story about that.
Oh, wow.
We were approaching our $850,000 goal, and we were all excited and watching the numbers go up and watching the numbers go up. And all of a sudden, there was a $33,333 donation, and we reached our goal of $850,000. We were ecstatic. We were kind of jumping around here. And I found out right afterwards that my friend Joe, sitting next to me, he and his family and his partners had pulled together. They wanted so desperately for us to reach this goal that they were the ones who donated that. And so he's had our back all along. And when we heard that, we just couldn't believe it. It was just so exciting. But I also think he inspired other people to keep giving because they saw that. And so he is one of two people who made those huge donations, and we're really grateful for that. And we're also grateful for everyone else who's donated. The threes have to do with Tesla, who said something to the effect of, if we could understand the magnificence of the numbers 3, 6, and 9, we could unlock the mysteries of the universe.
Yeah, and you know what? I don't usually tell people this, but we've been playing around with ideas for quotes for the next issue. We always have a quote in our magazine, and we wanted to do something with Tesla, and that was one of the possible quotes, and I think that one is going to be the winner. I think that's, if you can understand the magic of 3, 6, and 9?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I guess you could unlock all kinds of secrets and just really appreciate things.
One of the comments that was made on the Indiegogo site was that we should try for $3,333,333.
And 33 cents. Wow. That raises the question, what are you shooting for now? You've exceeded the goal. So what are you going to try to do now?
Well, we just would like to see interest continue in supporting this goal. And we're not putting a number on the goal, a number goal on the site. We just want to see if we can push it as far as possible and encourage people to help us with this. We think that it's a worthwhile thing. This is the only lab anywhere in the world where Tesla worked, the only one left. His Houston Street lab burned down. His Colorado Springs lab was taken down. So this is it. He had offices in New York City where he did some work, but nothing on this scale. And this was to be his crowning achievement, too. He looked at this as his major goal, to be able to transmit not just messages and radio waves, but actually electrical energy from this spot. And so we think it's really an important place in American but worldwide history, well worth preserving.
Interestingly, Long Island seems to have a lot of history as far as radio.
Yes.
It's not just Tesla, right?
That's true. Lee DeForest actually is another person in radio history who lived in Shoreham for a while, and we have a lot of a very large science community here on Long Island. So I think that that's part of the part of the reason we've gotten some of the support we have. And there's actually a Marconi building not too far away, the Marconi Shack it's called. So there's a lot of radio history here, and there's a Long Island a TV and radio historical society as well that's been trying to preserve the radio history of this area. RCA also had transmitting stations here.
Fascinating. Now, has anyone been in touch with AGFA, the people who actually own the land, to see if they're going to sell the land in the first place?
Well, we've been in touch with the real estate agent on and off over the last year, a couple of years. And we've also been in touch with different members of the AGFA administration and personnel. When we visited the site, AGFA personnel were there, and we've had occasion to talk to them. One of the things we had hoped to do was to encourage them to donate the property to us, but they're unwilling to do that. So we're going to do what we have to do to try to make sure that it's saved and that we can raise the money to make it a legacy of Tesla's.
And hopefully they won't try and jack up the price based on the fact that it's getting such a tremendous response. In fact, if they were to donate a portion of it, their name could live on in infamy as far as supporting something historical and important to science.
Absolutely. And, we're hopeful that Joe eventually will be able to do some filming right on location, which would give an extra authenticity to his film. And where there are a lot of people who have an interest in being on the spot where Tesla worked. So we hope that we're going to be able to offer a lot. One of the things we hope to do is make it more than just a place where you come and look at things in a glass case. We want it to be a place that's interactive and people can get their hands on things and learn how science works by actually experiencing something. And we want to have a physics playground for kids to learn about physics through their play. And we have a lot of ideas, and I'm sure we'll have more as time goes on and have many more suggested to us.
Yeah, if you open this up to kids and encourage them to take an interest in this, I think that will measure the success of the project overall.
I think so. And we already get calls from international visitors, people who want to come and talk to us and ask questions about what we know about the site. And so I'm often called to go visit Tesla Street, stand there and talk to people from, well, just this past week, there were some people from Istanbul who came to see the site, and they were taking pictures and asking questions. So
did they come all the way from Istanbul to
will come.
Did they come all the way from Istanbul just to see that site?
Well, I think they were here in New York, but they took the ride out here to Long Island.
Wow.
It's about an hour and a half ride, and so I think that was a particular purpose in their journey this far. They didn't come straight from Istanbul, although we've had people who've been from Japan and many of the European countries who make a point of coming here as part of their journey through America because they know about Tesla.
Well, I know when Kyle and I visited Tesla Street, we interviewed a few of the people that were kids on scooters, actually, that just were milling around, and we asked them what they knew about the site, because we didn't really know much about it ourselves at that point, and they basically just, all they knew was that it was a factory at some point.
Right, and that's a failing of our schools and in this country, is that we don't teach all of the, we've kind of watered down part of history and not provided a full education to children. I certainly didn't learn about Tesla until I was an adult, and I think that we're really missing out by not providing this kind of information to our children.
Okay. Any final words as far as how people can get involved, how they can continue to contribute, and anything else that you'd like our listeners to know?
Well, there's certainly encouraged to go to the Indiegogo page and join in the contributions there. They can visit our website. As I said, that's TeslaScienceCenter.org. Or we also have a Facebook page. They can certainly friend us and see what's going on. We have a hashtag for Twitter. It's TeslaScience. And they can get in touch with us by mail at Tesla Science Center, Post Office Box 552, Shoreham, New York, 11786. And they can look up Joe's film on fragmentsfromolympus.com.
And they can read The Oatmeal, theoatmeal.com.
Absolutely. Matthew's been great, and he posts information about what he's doing and what we're doing. And he's been he's the catalyst that helped promote the cause.
And I understand if you do donate $33,333 that he will do a cartoon about you.
On his website, absolutely.
And that's no small thing. He has millions and millions of followers. And
I think that his work in helping us made all of the difference in getting it out and getting the word out. His followers were the first ones to hop on and help us out, and we are very grateful to Matthew and to his followers and readers, and we're delighted that he was willing to help.
All right. Bernie, Kyle, any last words from you guys?
I just wanted to say, Jane, know that community is there for you, and that, even once the place is opened, there will be people that want to come and volunteer, and I'm sure in the remodeling process, people will be so eager to check it out or maybe lend a hand. Maybe you'll have work parties on the weekends or something, but good luck to you and fine work on getting the message out there and teaming up with people.
Well, thanks very much for having us on here, because we're sure this is going to help as well. We're sure your listeners are good-hearted people who will be happy to join in with us, and we thank you very much for inviting us.
Jane, thank you.
Thank you.
And Joe, thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
And we've been speaking with Jane Alcorn from the Nikola Tesla Museum, the future Nikola Tesla Museum, and Joe Sikorsky, filmmaker, also involved in the project. And, you know, I want to close, obviously, with something having to do with Tesla. You know, there's a band called Tesla, but they don't really do music about Tesla. I did, and there's a million songs called Tesla, but they're all pretty much dance tunes that don't really have words in them either. So I kind of went with what I think Nikola Tesla would like the most, and that's something from an album called Transistor Music, and it's Geistform is the name of the group here. And yeah, let's just go out with this, maybe with headphones on, and think about the future and what a Tesla museum could mean to all of us. And stay tuned to WBAI because we're going to Tampa in just a few minutes, the Republican National Convention, and get to hear all the fun from that part of the world. Until next week, Emmanuel for Off the Hook. Have a good night.
Right. Thank you. For those of you thinking we were just going off the air, no, this is actually music, I'm told. Mm-hmm. And something by Nikola Tesla and his band.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. See, oh, there he is now. There he is now. And we're waiting. Actually, oh, God, have mercy. What? In my old age, I no longer recognize what is music and what is dead a dead signal. All right. So I'm going to see if I can... we're supposed to be getting a feed from Pacifica, the Pacifica Foundation, the people that owns our Sydney. You're on radio now, please. Okay, so I'm waiting for their signal, which is coming in soon. Ah, I think that might be it, because we're going to bring you at 8 o'clock a special from the Pacifica Foundation, of which we are wholly owned. God help us. And it'll be about the ongoing Republican convention and all the fun stuff that's happening.
We bring you an encore broadcast of our recent interview with award-winning poet Martine Espada.
Now, this can't be
it. In this interview, we also...
Okay, so let's try the other signal. Okay, fine. So this is our other signal. So here we go.
Find out what's happening on the ground in New Orleans and in the Native American Houma Nation. We're despite being downgraded to a tropical storm, Hurricane Isaac has flooded communities, residents are evacuated, At least one levee has been breached. We look at the state of activism both here in Tampa at the RNC and around the country. We will discuss the RNC with the political editor of Tampa's Creative Loafing, an independent newspaper here, and talk about the relationship between the Muslim community and the GOP with a local Muslim community leader. And we'll go to the podium to hear speeches by former Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice and Wisconsin Representative Paul Ryan. But first, Mitch Jeserich, let us know what's been happening today. How you doing?
Well, Margaret, you know, it's interesting. Not nearly as eventful today, at least here at the convention, as was yesterday with all the Paul Ryan stuff. Really, the big story is what's happening in the Gulf Coast, the Gulf Coast states today. And that is interesting, and it's going to affect what happens here as well, because the two major speeches we're going to air a little bit later tonight are from Secretary of State, former Secretary of State, Condoleezza Rice, and then Paul Ryan. Condoleezza Rice is the only former Bush administration official who's going to be facing delegates. And it's interesting, it's happening today, the seven-year anniversary of when the levees broke in New Orleans. New Orleans right now, again, is underwater. And here's a Bush administration official. And now she was more foreign affairs, but nonetheless, here she is addressing delegates tonight. And I know we're going to have a lot more about all of this coming up through the next few hours.
Yeah. With Katrina happening, some of the policies that have been put forth, like getting rid of food stamps and all that.
Thank you so much, Mitch, filling us in on what is happening. And Davey D is also in the house with us. And Davey D, you've been out and about doing quite a lot of stuff today. What's up, Davey?
I got to apologize for that. I jumped my cue.
Oh, man.
I was all excited. I was like, I'm ready to go.
All righty.
Well, let me just explain what's going on. Just building off of what Mitch was saying, being on the floor this afternoon, talking with many of the Republicans that are here, that are in leadership position, they are very defensive and very defensive about Katrina. You know, I've asked everybody from Rudolph Giuliani on down about the austerity measures that they've been championing, including the fact that many have said that people who live in disaster zones or go through these hard times shouldn't be bailed out by the government. I'm saying what's happening in Louisiana right now, especially since Bobby Jindal has asked for additional money from President Obama. So that's something that's interesting. When you go on the floor, one of the things that you see is a big sign talking about donate to the victims of Hurricane Isaac. So they're ready to address that and not fall into that same trap that they did several years ago when they were all but absent and Condoleezza Rice was on Fifth Avenue shopping in the middle of the storm, if you remember.
Absolutely. And, you know, given the atmosphere here and austerity, definitely, you know, the word of the day. And, you know, a lot of what people went through following Katrina, not only in New Orleans, but throughout the Gulf, in Mississippi, the Houma Nation, the Native American communities, people really needed a lot of help. And is this the kind of country that provides that kind of help? Or are we just telling to people, well, you could go drown, you know, who cares, really?
Well, in reality, we're telling people, we're allowing people to drown. When you talk to people, they're trying to put a nice face on it. Oh, no, we want to make sure that you get help. But you just look at the policies and you look at the attitude. And if you look at the people who are victims, then you really see the turning of the back. The victims of Hurricane Katrina are perfect examples. But we also saw that in Tuscaloosa and also in Joplin. When you talk to folks and you see that they're still trying to recover.
Yeah, and, you know, the thing about Jindal, you know, well, okay, he's not coming to the RNC and he's complaining that President, you know, Obama is not providing sufficient help. But a lot of these big people who are opposed to big government, like Jindal, right, and that's also a lot of the rhetoric that you see here, will be the first, okay, to be talking about going to the government for help.
Right. I know you have some guests lined up from New Orleans, and maybe we can get them on the lines and talk to them so that we can find out. And also later on, in the middle of that conversation, I will let people hear some of the conversations that I had with people regarding this, with Rudolph Giuliani, South Carolina Congressman Joe Wilson, and a few others. But who are the people that we have here, Margaret?
Well, right now we have on the line with us two people who are actually based right in the heart of what is happening on the ground in New Orleans. I'd like to welcome to the Pacifica national coverage here Charisse Harrison Nelson, who is in New Orleans. Charisse, thank you so very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And also on the line with us is Tracy Washington, also based in the area. Tracy, thank you so very much for joining us.
Thank you, Margaret, for having me on. And hello, Charisse. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you, Tracy?
I'm doing well. See, Margaret, you get to connect folks who are in the same town and same coast, the same zip code, and don't hook up enough.
I'm telling you. And just to tell our guests a little bit about Charisse Harrison Nelson, you could likely tell by that exchange between her and Tracy, the family, longtime residents, very well known in the New Orleans area. Charisse has been an educator. Her mom, Charisse, is a well-known artist, also folk artist and other art in New Orleans. And also Tracy Washington, really a national figure. Tracy has been very outspoken post-Katrina in terms of legal actions and really fighting to make sure that the kind of recovery that was needed happened. So that's the two guests we have right now. And Charisse, why don't we start with you and tell us what is the situation there right now?
Well, first of all, I'd like to begin by saying that it's a very different situation from the October 29, 2005 event. President Obama has had conference calls with the governor, the mayor, and the mayors of the surrounding metro New Orleans area, as well as the governors of Alabama, Mississippi, I think in Florida. So he's being very proactive in putting services in place. And you have to forgive me if I struggle with my words. I went through chemotherapy last year, and have some memory issues, and sometimes the words are, it's like putting a puzzle together and you're trying to put the words together and they're just not fitting correctly. So
Charisse, I know you have told me that you definitely think that New Orleans is a toxic environment, and I know since Katrina, I remember you after Katrina, strong and outspoken, and you have said that you think there's a connection with the struggles, your health issues, and the environment on the ground.
It's so toxic, and toxicity is both in the environment and for me as a former public school teacher, just the stress of living in New Orleans, knowing you were fired for me after working for 24.96 years, not having health insurance, struggling to get health insurance, taking an early retirement. One-third of my retirement goes to health insurance, one-third of my retirement, because I wasn't able to get the benefits that I worked for in education. Being a teacher is a calling. It's not just a job. You're called to do this work, to try to make a difference in children's lives, to enlighten them and to turn them on to learning, because you want them to be productive American citizens. You want them to partake of the American way of life, to be examples of the pillars of character. All those things are important, and I feel that I was a very good teacher. I love my second and third grade students, and you know, what happened to us in the aftermath of that 2005 event just wasn't right. And the recovery is an ongoing one, and it is very, very difficult. It is still very difficult living in this environment.
Charisse, sorry about that. Sorry to interrupt you. I'm sure our listeners are very anxious to know, what is your situation right now? What is the weather situation as it's happening right now? Do you have electricity, running water, any winds about, any water, you know, that sort of thing?
Well, Charisse, we don't have electricity. The mayor has asked that we do not flush the toilet if it's not necessary. So, need I say more?
Yeah.
Where I am, the lights went out at 1 o'clock in the morning. My mother's lights in the ninth ward went out at electricity ceased to happen at about 5 o'clock yesterday evening.
Yes, and Tracy, bringing you into this discussion, we understand that there is some flooding in parts of New Orleans, and at least one levee has been breached. And although Isaac has been downgraded to a tropical storm, the storm is moving very, very slowly, and there's still a lot of worries about rain and possible flooding, and that it may not be over. New Orleans and the area in that region may not be out of the woods quite yet. Tracy.
Well, yes, and thank you, and thank you, Sharice, for sharing. Sharice was sharing so much. I think to put it in context, what you've described as far as the condition right now, Margaret, is exactly right. We have one of the slowest moving. This has been a storm that has been deceptive to us. We heard tropical storm. I think if anybody, I've got a zillion friends on.